It's time now for hour number two of this weekend's big two-hour installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and our host of the show is Carol Marks, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism. Let's kick this hour off with Carol Marks in conversation with Michelle Zackheim. She's the author of four books and has worked as a fresco muralist, an installation artist, a printmaker, and a painter. She's going to tell Carol about her new novel titled Last Train to Paris. It's published by Europa Editions.
What inspired you to write Last Train to Paris?
Well, I had many, many years ago, I had been sort of snooping around. This is before I started writing. I had been snooping around, reading different things, of course. But one of the books I read at that time, because I was very interested in the French writers, was a book of essays by Janet Flanner, who was not French, but who wrote from Paris for the New York for the New Yorker magazine. And in the one of her essays was the story of a murder of a woman named Jean de Coven, who was in Paris for the exposition in 1937 with her aunt Ada Zackheim. And I thought, wow, I've never seen Zackheim before. It's a very unusual name. It's not particularly one that most people are aware of. And so I put it away. I thought this was interesting, and I put it in a file. And many years later, I was looking for ideas and what it was that I wanted to tackle next. And I came across the essay, and it interested me. And so I started researching, and out of that research came this book, Last Train to Paris.
And, you know, I always say nothing happens by chance, if you saw that article. And I was also fascinated to learn that the first draft of this novel had a male reporter as a main character. What made you rewrite it, only this time using as a main character an 87-year-old woman who was looking back on the time she spent covering France and Germany just before World War II?
I wanted to write in a man's voice for a long time as a main character. I mean, I had written in a male voice for supplementary characters, of course, but never as a main character. And so I took it as a challenge, and I wrote it. And, you know, I liked him. His name was Jimmy Corso, and I liked him enough. But I don't know, I never quite felt like I was telling the truth. And I turned it in to the publisher, and the publisher bought it. And then 2 weeks later, I thought, I just can't do this. It's not an honest book on my part. And so I called them, the publisher, and I said, can I have it back? And he said, well, why? It's perfectly fine. I like it. I said, no, it just doesn't work. So I took it back, and it took me about a year and a half, and I translated it into a woman's voice. But what I did is, that was fun for me and sort of interesting, is that I could make her sort of tough by using what I had found out about Jimmy Corso and writing from a male point of view. So I was able to make her tougher than my other characters have been in my other books. And I liked her. And, you know, when I finished writing her story, then I really missed her, much more than I missed Jimmy Corso.
Talking about the main reporter and character in your book, Rose Mannin, who covered among the other amazing things that you write about, the public meeting between Hitler and Mussolini. So how did you go about doing the research you needed for the book on something very specific about that meeting?
Well, first of all, I did it, you know, by reading, of course. I mean, there's lots of reports about that. I also looked at newspaper articles in the Tribune from that time. And then I was in Berlin, and I walked the walk. You know, I tried to understand the physicality of the movement of so many people. So I did it. That's the way I do it. That's the way I always do things. So I have to be there and see it. Yeah.
Very, very thorough. And there's one point in your book that really resonated with me, because Rose, talking about her job, said that the press conferences that were held by the Third Reich were really a joke, and she knew they were being fed propaganda. How was Germany able to control the international news during that time?
Well, they controlled, they did and they didn't. I mean, they controlled, it appeared to be controlled because the reporters that were in Berlin at the press conferences were fed a certain kinds of information. But, you know, overall, it got out. It got, what was going on got out. And the more that got out, of course, the harder it was on the reporters in Berlin to sit in a news conference like that and pretend as if they're paying attention and honoring the information that's been given to them. Until it got to the point where it was impossible to be in Berlin, of course, if you were a foreign correspondent from any country. It built, as it does, with that kind of a situation.
And it certainly did. And now your novel is not only about the insanity of war, but about love. And Rose's life certainly gets complicated when, during one of her many trips to Berlin, she falls in love with a Jewish man named Leon. And the relationship really forces her to confront many things. And what were the couple of things, and can you tell us a little bit about what that relationship was all about?
Well, I created the relationship to ask for Rose to ask herself what it was to be a Jew. And she had never really thought about it. She'd never really questioned it. She just moved through the world like a, you know, sort of like a cyclone, and just did what she needed to do and when she needed to do it, with empathy, but still, you know, with a vision ahead of her. And so when she fell in love with Leon, all of a sudden she realized that she hadn't known much about herself at all. And he was a catalyst. He was the one that forced her to be more introspective and to actually become a better reporter, because she became more empathic. So he was a very important part of her life.
And in the end, what made your novel so mesmerizing to me, and I'm sure to your readers, is that it pits love against war, and Rose has to make an agonizing make who will go with her on the last train to Paris, her hard-boiled narcissistic mother, or her lover Leon. And they're going to have to read the book to find all that out, but, you know, what a choice to have to make.
Right. And let's not tell anybody what it was.
Oh, no, we're not. We're not. They will find all that out and so many other interesting things in your book. Now, do you think that one of the reasons Rose and the other characters in your book were able to survive the horrors of World War II is the fact that they were resilient? And how important do you think that quality is? And have you seen it help you?
Well, I think resilience helps, but a lot also has to do with luck. And it has to do with intuition. It has to do with, you know, knowing when to get out, kind of thing, and not dreaming and thinking it's going to go away. But how are we to know that? I mean, it's, look what happened in the war. You know, look at how many millions of people were killed because they didn't see in advance. I can't say what I would see or what I wouldn't see.
This is true.
You know, I don't know.
It makes you all think that so much of life happens by chance, or is it chance? We don't know.
We don't.
But you are so hard working as a writer. I understand you're writing another book. What's it going to be about?
Well, you're going to have to wait on that one. I'm
all
not
right.
Sure I can talk about it yet. It's still.
I bet you're working on it.
Yeah, I'm
you're
working
thinking about it.
Sure. But I'm still sort of living with my characters and getting to know them. So. Going to be a little while.
And that's so important. And I love the quote that you have starting your book from Mark Twain about writing. So is that pretty apropos? Can you tell our listeners what it was?
Oh, sure. It's very short. It's I'll read it to you right now. Get your facts first, and then you can distort them as much as you like. And Mark Twain wrote that. And Mark Twain was a very important part of my life as a young woman. And so I went to him because I liked the wryness of his writing and his how he responded to the world. And it's true. It's true with novels. It's not it's true with fiction that, you know, you can use non-fictional material, but then you start distorting it. And I guess that's when the imagination kicks in.
That's Michelle Zackheim in conversation with Carol Marx. Her novel is titled Last Train to Paris, and it's published by Europa Editions. Carol Marx returns talking to a Pulitzer Prize-winning business writer and editor with over 30 years of experience in the field. That's next, when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
Did you know? An estimated 16 million Americans suffer from a chronic inflammatory facial condition called rosacea, and most of them don't know it? Often mistaken for acne, there are many signs and symptoms of rosacea besides facial redness, pimples, and visible blood vessels. Other symptoms may include burning, stinging, swelling, and even enlargement of the nose. Rosacea can also affect the eyes, causing a bloodshot appearance and irritation that could lead to vision loss. Any one of these signs and symptoms can mean rosacea, and without medical help, it can become increasingly severe and wreak havoc on your personal and professional life. Rosacea typically appears any time after age 30. So if you experience any sign of rosacea, see a dermatologist for diagnosis and treatment. Or for more information, visit the National Rosacea Society at rosacea.org.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we continue now with our host, Carol Marx, in conversation with Maura McEnany. She's a Pulitzer Prize-winning business writer and editor with over 30 years of experience in the field. She's going to talk to Carol about her latest book titled Willard Garvey, An Epic Life, published by Independent Institute.
Who is William Garvey? And if he was such an successful innovator and businessman, why is his name familiar to us the way the Rockefellers and the Vanderbilts are?
Well, Willard Garvey was an extraordinary man, as you say, and a well-known businessman in Kansas and around the world. If you lived in Wichita, Kansas, which is about smack dab in the middle of the country, you would certainly have heard of him. The Garvey family was a prominent family in Kansas history. Willard's father was a renowned farmer, an oil man, and an entrepreneur all of his own. And his oldest son, Willard Garvey, took the family fortune and grew it a great deal. Willard was involved in a number of business ventures. He grew his fortune to include, it was in the building trades, in the petroleum industry, in the shipping industry, and in he was one of the largest private landowners in the state of Nevada at one time. So his business fortune and his business interests stretched around the country, and he also had a business experience overseas building almost like post-World War II homes in the late 1950s, which I can talk about a little later. But this was a man in middle America who wanted to improve his own region and the world.
And I think that's what's so amazing, is the fact that he just wasn't for profit, which, you know, a lot of business people, that's their sole focus. But he truly wanted to make the world a better place for everyone to live in. What got you interested in writing about him? I know you went out to Kansas in 1979 to work on a newspaper there. But was there one particular thing that you got interested in wanting to meet him and write about him?
Well, it was actually in Nevada where I first heard of the Garveys. I was a young reporter working there at my very first newspaper job, and I heard about Willard Garvey and sort of the Garvey family ownership of a lot of land, and, you know, it was sort of a mystique to me. I became friendly with his daughter and then the family over a span of 30 years, really, and I kind of came to know about Willard's imprint in Kansas and around the world over time. And after he passed, it was sort of a mutual agreement that his biography needed to be written.
And it certainly did. And I want to ask you some questions about his war experience, because I think it was all kind of amazing. And when you finally did meet him and he was talking to you about, you know, the war and traveling on the Queen Mary and something extraordinary happened, you were kind of skeptical. What extraordinary thing happened? And when you found out his story was real, what did you realize?
Well, I think you're referring to Willard as a young soldier, like so
right.
many others, took the Queen Mary over to England to serve his duty. And, you know, Willard, over his life, would often always talk about his war experience. It was a very important thing to him. And he talked about, oh, yeah, one time I was on the Queen Mary, and we got hit by a big wave, and dishes broke, and I was in a top bunk, and I rolled over and went to sleep. Well, when I started doing some research about the Queen Mary, the gray ghost, you know, it was very fascinating to me to learn about this luxury liner that was transported into a troop ship. And turns out I was just, you know, syncing up the time periods of when he may have been on that ship, and I got a book about the gray ghost. And turns out the ship that Willard was on at the exact time was hit by a rogue wave. And it nearly capsized the Queen Mary, and it was the only, you know, I was floored when I read it, and I sort of went jumping up and down a little bit because that was what he was referring to. The only time that happened, it was that exact period, and, you know, I couldn't believe that it was that serious, of an incident that was written about, and Willard sort of, poo-pooed it a little bit, said, oh, I rolled over and went back to sleep after it happened. So it was indicative of, you know, he said he met many famous people. He said he had very many experiences in a lot of the speeches that he wrote about. And every time I went back and really researched what had transpired, it was all true.
And, you know,
and
yeah,
I was looking for him to be telling a tall tale. But in some cases, I think he underplayed it.
Absolutely, because he was right on target. And one of the interesting things that you've said more was Willard Garvey is really a more sophisticated Forrest Gump. He just happened to be at the right place at the right time. So can you tell our listeners what happened at the Potsdam Conference after World War II?
Sure. I say that Willard, you know, this is an American story, and this is a story of a man who saw history unveiling before him and was a part of it. So as a major in World War II, after the war, Willard was one of the first officers in Berlin, in a fallen Berlin, and he was called by his officers to take a trip down to Potsdam. And didn't really know what was happening there, but what he was in charge of was setting up the Potsdam Conference, which is where the Allied leaders from Britain, Russia, and the United States that ended up dividing up Germany, determining the future of Poland, and enlisting Russia to defeat Japan. So Willard was, you know, was there seeing all these world dignitaries come in, and he did in fact see Stalin, and he often talked about seeing Stalin. At one point he was, you know, 35 feet away from him and said something along the lines of, you know, I could have shot him, but you never really know how you would have changed history or something along those lines. But he did, and I kept looking for him in some video clips of Potsdam. I thought I might have spotted him once, but I wasn't sure. But he said, you know, if he had done it, it would have been his last shot, and he would have preferred to have remained on Earth.
You know, I'm certainly agree with that, what he said. Now, his being in the Army, it seems that he learned a lot of valuable skills from it. How did it help him in his business world?
Well, Willard was very anti-government, but at the same time, he did learn a lot from the Army, and I think it was, in some ways, the bureaucracies helped systematize things for him. I think he was a man with so many ideas that it was difficult for him to sort of organize them, and so many different businesses. So he created this system called the GO system, G-O, Garvey Organization. It could stand for any number of things, but it was really how you prioritized your own, as working for him, your own projects and things like that. People complained about it because he was forever changing his system of reporting and saying, you know, how much would the project cost, what would be the outcome, et cetera, et cetera. But in the end, people praised it and saying they took pieces of it and used it in their own businesses or their own lives later on. So I think his Army experience gave him a worldly view, too. I think him being over there really opened up, as we all have episodes happen as young people, that open us up to the world. I think the war certainly did to him as well.
And you just mentioned that he was in favor of limited government and also privatization. So what kinds of things would he have liked to be able to privatize?
Everything.
Almost everything. You're right.
So Willard was extremely, as you say, he was in favor of the entrepreneurial spirit, and he didn't believe that government really had any place in business, and that he watched it almost destroy his own father, who built up, as I said, considerable wealth as a farmer in Colby, Kansas, and later as a businessman of many varieties, and that, you know, they were almost destroyed by taxes at one point. So I think Willard sort of grew up knowing that the government was not his friend, and he was very vocal about that. He believed in privatizing everything, from jails. He was an early pioneer of, you know, private schools and voucher systems, and had ideas about things that, you know, we're seeing a little bit today, roads, bridges, anything. He just didn't believe that the government had any business involving in his own business.
That's Maura McEnany in conversation with Carol Marks. Her book is titled Willard Garvey, An Epic Life, published by Independent Institute. We'll be joined by Richard Neer in conversation with the author of You Say Tomato, I Say Shut Up, and other books as well. That's next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray.
check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we've heard a couple of very interesting interviews this hour, conducted by the host and founder of the program, Carol Marks. Carol Marks is one of the nation's leading experts in upper demographic issues, and she's a champion in a battle against ageism that never ends. And she, of course, is the guiding light, having started this show, founded this program some 20 years ago. And here it is, still in national syndication and going strong, flying in the face of conventional wisdom that a program geared to people over 50 could never make it in radio. Well, we have proven them wrong in that regard. If you want to know more about Carol Marks and you want resources for better living and hear some of the great shows that we've done on A Touch of Gray and some of the good interviews, go to the website atouchofgray.com. Gray is spelled with an E, atouchofgray.com. Coming up next, Richard Neer joins us, and he'll be interviewing Annabelle Gurwitch, author of You Say Tomato, I Say Shut Up, and also Fired, which became an acclaimed documentary and Showtime comedy special. Her new book is called I See You Made an Effort, Compliments, Indignities, and Survival Stories from the Edge of 50, and that's next.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and now as promised, here's our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, in conversation with Annabelle Gerwich. She's the author of You Say Tomato, I Say Shut Up, also Fired, which became an acclaimed documentary and Showtime comedy special. She'll be talking to Richard about her new book titled I See You Made an Effort, Compliments, Indignities, and Survival Stories from the Edge of 50, published by Blue Rider Press.
I don't know how grown up this next segment is going to be. We're talking to Annabelle Gerwich, who is an accomplished actress, comedian, writer. You've seen her all over the place. And her latest is called I See You Made an Effort, Compliments, Indignities, and Survival Stories from the Edge of 50. Great to have you on, Annabelle. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Yeah, you know, I have to say, from all my years of hosting dinner and a movie on TBS, I've been so lucky. I've had so many loyal fans. I've been on this book tour for I See You Made an Effort, and people always come out and talk to me about the show. And it's so nice, as one gets to be in this half a century old, that people remember your work.
Okay, so I see you made an effort. I kind of, when I got the book, figured out what you meant by that title, but explain it to us in a little bit more detail.
Well, I think the ladies out there will really know what that phrase means. I see you made an effort is something that was actually said to me by my hairdresser. I was going to get my hair blow-dried I was actually taking my teenage son to a concert, and I was like, you know what? I want to look good. I want to prove that I'm still the cool mom, and I don't always get this done, but I went in, and I thought I was really dressed up, and he said, oh, I see you made an effort. And I thought, oh, my gosh, this is as good as it gets at this age. Is that the biggest compliment I can hope for now? But the title really refers to even beyond that, all of the effort it takes as you're trying to maintain your health and the way you look and being visible in the world and in the employment world, and you're supposed to take these supplements for a person of this age, and you have to get the amount of exercise for at this age, and not just one kind of exercise, but you have to vary the exercise, and you need to get sleep, and you need to put money away for your retirement, but you still have kids at home and you have to support them, and your parents need your help because they're getting older. And there's a lot of effort, I find, that goes into hitting middle age, and that's what the title refers to.
Yeah, well, I always I see you made an effort, dot, 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 but you fell a little short.
Well,
is the unsaid part, right?
One of the things I think about, you know, hitting middle age is actually, you know, I think some of that perfectionism has had to go away. So when you say about falling short, I was definitely in that generation where, you know, we thought we could have it all. Now I'm trying to have it some. And that's my motto, just having it some and finding joy in that and finding, you know, happiness and a sense of humor in all of that, because that perfectionism, I think, that you can have when you're younger, doesn't work so well.
And you're not buying the idea that 50 is the new 40, right?
Well, you know, that's a line that I think has become something that has really done us a disservice. You know, there's that 40 is the new 30 and 50 is the new 40. And first of all, I maintain that when you're 50, no one who's 40 thinks you're the same age as them, unless you've got a lot of tattoos. So you're not fooling anyone. Plus, in a way, you're doing yourself a disservice because, you know, you are that age. You have all these years of experience behind you, and you're really going through different stuff at this age. So I prefer to say it's not your mother's 50. It's not your father's 50. 50 is the new 50. And we're trying to figure out, you know, what that means for us now.
Well, one of the funniest chapters in the book is your fantasy affair and all the steps that you would have to take to realize this affair, from deciding where and how you were going to dress and how you were going to, at the moment, the big moment came, how you were going to, let's see, on a family show, how I can put this delicately, prepare yourself for this.
Okay, so this was the whole thing. You know, this, that's one of the chapters in the book, and it's a chapter about, it's sort of my version of 50 Shades of Grey, middle-aged style. What if I was going to have an affair? And, of course, who do I find attractive at this age? Someone who can fix my computer. So my fantasy is about seducing my Apple genius, which, by the way, I have actually heard is a real thing. I have heard that it's like sort of like a cougar hangout is the genius bar.
But you don't like the word cougar.
Yeah, listen, I was completely joking. I had no idea I'd tapped into something that is actually a real thing. But then it's all the machinations I would have to go through. I mean, first of all, what do you talk about? Can't mention that I still know the lyrics to Fleetwood Mac songs. Don't call it the Twitter. Don't call it the Facebook. If we go to a hotel and I want room service, I'd have to pull out my reading glasses. What music would we listen to? If we went to my house, we can't go to my house. There's a pair of Spanx at the foot of the bed and the tweezers that I hide around the house, and just all the ridiculous things I'd have to go through to try to see this through. And a big surprise, in the end, it remains a fantasy. Spoiler alert right there.
Yeah. Well, how did your husband feel reading that chapter?
Well, first of all, I did not show him that story until it was already published. One of the stories in the book, though, is about going to see a love coach. I wanted to write about, you know, how you're trying to keep things going at this age. And, you know, I felt like, you know, this is an interesting thing. This, you know, the book is really about middling in all areas of your life. And I'm in what could be considered the middle of our marriage. We're going into 17 years. And, you know, there's, you know, the wedding pages in the newspaper. The Huffington Post now has the divorce section, but there's no real celebration of people who are still there. There's no, like, Jeff and Annabelle still married. So I thought, let me write about this. And so I do write about sort of the highs and the lows of the middle of marriage. But I did go to see this love coach because I wanted to write. I know so many people who are single at this age, and that can be really challenging. So I tell the story of taking a class on internet dating for the middle-aged, and you just have to read it, because there are definitely pitfalls, things to be avoided, things you should do, and it was just so funny. My friend, I write this in the book, my friend Christine went on one of those, like, Our Time sites, you know, and she was matched with two people, her brother and a homeless guy who goes by the name Bling Bling. It's challenging. You can't make this stuff up.
Annabelle, in addition to the funny stories and everything, you do have some serious parts to the book. One of them is your friend Robin, who you've known for 22 years, calls you and says she has cancer. And
when writing this book, so I wanted to tell these stories about the moment that you realize, you know, your life has changed, and to deal with them with a sense of humor. And so there are these stories about, you know, sort of what you might say, the sillier things, like, you know, going to the cosmetic store. You know, you go into a department store and they want to sell you something called Hope in a Jar. I mean, I think it's really criminal. But I wanted to write about the more serious things that we face as well, and some of those are sandwich generation issues, you know, having kids at home, dealing with aging parents. And this particular story is about how, you know, you get to be this age, and I now know which are the good cancers and which are the bad cancers. That's something I didn't know when I was younger. My friend Robin was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and all of her girlfriends, as we saw her through this, her medical odyssey, until it came to the point where, you know, it's the pancreatic cancer is one of those no one gets out of here alive cancers. That's when, you know, when Steve Jobs, when someone like Steve Jobs has it and he can't, you know, figure out to cure Steve Jobs, you know, it's that serious. And so we did do an assisted suicide with her, and it was really the end. And I write about that story because I think that's something that so many of us have gone through or will go through. And there were these just heartbreaking moments of that odyssey. But there were also moments of just incredible hilarity. And I don't mean, you know, we're laughing at the experience, but, you know, you're laughing to cope with the experience. And there was just like this moment in the middle of the night when we'd given her these drugs, we'd upped the medication, and I had to wake her up and I had to say, don't die yet, we don't know your computer password. You just cannot believe that that's happening to you when it happens.
Yeah. On a lighter note, plastic surgery. Now, you have, you say you've had things injected in your face you wouldn't clean your house with, but a lot of people are like, oh, I don't want plastic surgery. I want to grow old gracefully. What's your impetus to taking that step?
Well, let me just say, you know, I don't know about growing old gracefully. That's a phrase I'd like to see retired. I always say, I'm aging with a vengeance. I'm still here. Because that gracefully thing, I don't even know what that means. I think it takes a lot of effort. And the thing I think is so confusing for, maybe it's even more confusing for women than men, although men certainly do this stuff too, is you don't know what you're looking at when you see, particularly women in the media. And, you know, like Elle McPherson is turning 50. That's something that's been on the news. Well, first of all, she was Elle McPherson before she turned 50. I mean, and we have no idea. She has trainers and toners and dermatologists, and who knows what she's doing. And I don't begrudge anyone anything. I mean, of course, I think we can all say no one wants to end up looking like a Picasso, which can happen. But I wrote this book, really, I consider it like for the rest of us who don't have a $1 million to spend on your face. It's very anxiety-making that you see these images in the media. And I, of course, I'm trying to walk a middle road. I've done a little of this, I've done a little of that, and I write about it because it's also frustrating, because if you do the Botox, you know, in a couple months it's gone and you just wonder, was it really worth it? So, you know, what I'm writing about is the ridiculousness of it and making fun of myself and everyone else. And, you know, of course, living in Los Angeles, it's so easy to make fun of these extreme cases you see. And I do write about, I say, you know, when the big earthquake comes, there will be women unrecognizable to their own assistants, roaming the streets looking for Botox. And hopefully by then I will have stockpiled it from the trunk of my car. I'll be selling it at hugely inflated prices, and I'll be able to afford my retirement.
Annabelle Gurwitch in conversation with Richard Neer. Her book is I See You Made an Effort, Compliments, Indignities, and Survival Stories from the Edge of 50, published by Blue Rider Press. Go to AnnabelleGurwitch.com for more information. Richard returns with more conversation when A Touch of Grey continues.
You're age 65, and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Carol Marx is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marx offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marx is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined again, as promised, for this final segment of our two-hour broadcast by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer. Richard, have you seen Godzilla yet? It opened this week. The new Godzilla. The new Godzilla. It seems like there's always a new Godzilla.
Was he in my neck of the woods? Because I probably would have heard him coming if he was here.
Here's my Godzilla imitation.
That's pretty good.
Sort of like an elephant on steroids, you know.
That's pretty good.
I used to do.
You know, I saw the one that was out in the late 90s. Was Matthew Broderick in that? I think.
Yes. And Jean Reno.
It was so terrible that I wonder why they're even trying to do another one. Although this one's getting decent reviews.
This one seems darker and more mysterious and dramatic. It seems to have a. It's kind of on a different level, as if it really were happening, as opposed to the cartoon version of it, which really the Matthew Broderick version was kind of cartoon-like. An actor that I really like was in that Jean Reno, the guy who played The Professional. Remember that movie?
Oh, yeah, Frenchman.
Yeah, the French actor. Very lots of personality and lots of – he's quite a character. But I can't imagine
why they keep making Godzilla movies. And, you know, we haven't seen it yet. And you know, I used to do a radio feature years ago where my co-host and I reviewed movies that we'd never seen. The whole purpose of it was that we were doing movie reviews of films we'd never seen, but that we'd only seen the trailers and heard about them. And then we would review them.
How many people, though, dismiss films that they have never seen? You know, like they'll say, did you see them? Oh, no, no, that was awful.
Yeah, right.
You know, based on critic reviews or friends who liked it or didn't like it or what the trailer looked like. Oh, that movie looks stupid. I'm not going to go see that one. So I imagine there are a lot of folks out there who do that informally.
Yeah. I think a lot of people form opinions about things that they have no firsthand experience with, just based on preconceived notions or what they hear other people say, and that's kind of crazy, but it's very, very common.
Well, I think, Michael, it's because there's so many choices out there that you need to narrow it down, and we need, you know, we immediately have these things like, oh, there's too much out there. It's this cognitive dissonance. So you really need, it's like when you go to a restaurant and there are too many things on the menu and you can't decide what you want to eat. Whereas if there are only four or five things, it's much easier to come to a decision.
They actually have done neurological tests on this very subject and have found that people become uncomfortable and worry when they have choices, that they might have made the wrong choice, that they always think, maybe I should have gotten the mango ice cream as opposed to the pistachio when there's 100 flavors to choose from, as opposed to vanilla, chocolate, and strawberry.
Right. Buyer's remorse, they call it, when it comes down to something major. You know, you buy a house, and then 2 days later you go, oh, what have I gotten myself into? This car, I don't need this car. I should have gotten this car. So I think we all second-guess ourselves.
Also, you know, sales. How do you like the fact that some places are constantly having sales? It only leads, you know, the Memorial Day sale. You're only 2 days left. Then after the 2 days, the post-Memorial Day sale. Everything we didn't sell during the Memorial Day sale is now even cheaper. You know, it's
that's why I never buy anything retail. I mean, if you ever pay the MSRP, the manufacturer's suggested list price, you're paying too much because invariably they'll discount it at some point.
Well, I only have one thing left to say to you as we close the program.
That's a great Godzilla. You should be a Foley expert.
Thank you, Richard. Richard Neer, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you to Richard. Thank you to Steve Wiseman. Thank you to Kevin Casey. Thank you to Beverly Santanella, our producer on the front line. And, of course, thank you to Carol Marks, the host, founder, and guiding light of our program. On behalf of all of us, I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another 2-hour installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.